Welcome to Catherine Flynn's podcast, Intelligent Edge Yoga, conversations for smart, compassionate practice. Each episode will guide and inquire into ethics-based spirituality within a modern paradigm of practice. Whether your practice is yoga, Ayurveda, meditation, or simply living a life full of intention, this is for you. I'd like you to take a moment to consider supporting this podcast through Patreon. Your pledges enable the continuation of the podcast. Patrons will also receive exclusive resources, behind-the-scenes material for instructors, guided yoga and meditation sessions for yogis, and everything in between. This is just the start of something new and exciting. You can be a part of it by going to patreon.com/intelligentedgeyoga and clicking on the large orange button. Thanks.
Welcome to Intelligent Edge Yoga, yoga conversations for smart, compassionate practice with Catherine Ann Flynn. I'm Catherine. Okay. So it was not my intention to offer a retreat only to people who identify as women. And that's how it shook out. And that was, it simply provided guidance to me that I could speak in a perhaps more specific way than I would if we had a greater diversity of sex and gender in the room. And so I'm going to speak in today's Dharma talk a little bit about why we might be here, or at least what drew me to this kind of practice as women. I have not always been good at giving myself permission to do things like this. In my household, my partner Alex will often say, "You're the only one holding you back from going away. You have my support and permission." But it's not always that easy. I know you know it's not that easy. Does anyone feel like they are the operations managers of their house? Yeah. Yeah. We know that in Canada, women still spend almost an hour more a day on housework than men. And we also know that most women identify as the operations manager of their home, because while advertisements for food and drink have really diversified as to who they're targeted toward, baby products, laundry products, and cleaning products are marketed 98% of the time to women. And so there's still, whether your household skews that hard in terms of who does what, we still know that women are typically responsible for the daily operations in their home and for tracking things. And one of the beauties of silent retreat is that I will not know if I get a text message to the effect of, "Where is the olive oil?" I won't be checking. And the challenge of parenting and maintaining a household is pretty unglamorous in its destination because it is endless. I'm not sure, did anyone hear the CBC talk recently about smart appliances and how the refrigerator is the holdout? There's just no way to make a refrigerator smarter than it is. And one of the things that they spoke about was that advertisements have always and probably will always push the "it will make your life easier" and "it will shorten the duration and make it happen like a snap," because in households, typically women tend to do the tasks that are endless: laundry, dishes, which no one is like, "Good job, such a great job on those dishes." Whereas more goal-oriented tasks tend to fall to male partners: cutting the lawn, painting the room, building the playset, whatever it is. Things that often come with congratulations on the end of them. However, there is a similarity between spiritual work, and cleaning the house. Has anyone ever been either on retreat or in meditation or in a yoga class where the teacher tells you, you know, and this is like washing the dishes. You can do this at any time. Has anyone heard that talk before? Yeah. Yeah. It's a pop. The dishes in particular seem to be a popular one. But a lot of spiritual work is tedious and endless and unglamorous. And that's why I wanted you all to come this weekend, was for tedious, unglamorous meditation. I really believe in the benefit of stepping out of one's life in a really simple way. I think that stepping out in simplicity makes us realize how much we're adding to our lives to cope with the too muchness of our lives. And it doesn't need to be, Mexico or Barbados or Florida for it to be really potent in its healthfulness for us. And dosage and frequency has everything to do with it. We learn from teachers and community, from meditation, yoga, and Ayurveda, intervention tools. And that's really what they all are. It's tools for intervention. Has anyone through their yoga and meditation practice learned the signs, the little red flags that things are starting to go sideways in your mental and physical health? Yeah. And then through these practices, we cultivate the tools of withstanding suffering for less time. Right? We wake up faster to our suffering. And then hopefully we apply some of the techniques that we've learned and suffer less. We also lean in for the ice cream slightly less. Although not to moralize food intake. I ate a tub of Ben and Jerry's one night in October and it was amazing. It was everything I wanted and I was fully at peace with it. Your yoga and Ayurveda and meditation should help you eat sugar skillfully. One tub of Ben and Jerry's rather than one every night for a while. Right? Yeah. Amen. Which is why you have chocolate sitting in front of you. And there's more to come. Many modern Buddhist teachers extol the benefits of the practice for your life. Michael Stone and my dear Mona, and this is from my dear friend Dallas, are on the altar behind me. And Michael Stone said, there is no yoga without your life. And I know that as a new parent, I really struggled with seeing my son as an obstacle to practice, not as the practice. And so if you have anything with you, like a mala, a stone, a bracelet, a talisman of any kind, if you would like to add it to the altar, you are welcome to. You will also see a photo of many of my students, my sister and my mother, my son and my partner, and my grandparents, because on our altars, we put that which we bow to. And so it represents the different parts of myself and my life that I'm content to take some time away from so that I show up for these people in better ways when we're done. So there is no yoga, there is no practice without your life. Any shares or questions around that? No. There is no yoga without your life. Yeah. And so if you want to add your talisman or your mala to the altar, you can leave it there for the duration of our stay. And then when you take it with you, it will be a talisman for the things that you cultivated here. It'll be a reminder of all your good work and perhaps inspire you to go back to work. This kind of work. So Buddhism has two major schools. There's the Theravadan school and the Mahayana school. And they have different ideas about sort of what the goals of what we call in the English language enlightenment would be. So with Theravada Buddhism, you have the path toward arhatship. Arhat, A-R-H-A-T, once it gets transliterated into English. And stream entry, or one who has entered the stream, non-returner. There's four stages to it. But the awakened one is what Buddha means. So arhatship is one who is awakened to the truth of the universe. With the Mahayana tradition, if the Theravada Buddhism tradition is sort of sharpened to the point, get through these four stages and one shall be enlightened. The Mahayana tradition is characterized by the Bodhisattva. And the Bodhisattva is one who lives like a Buddha, has reached enlightenment almost, but chooses to stick around through this life and future incarnations to help others get there. So the motto would be, I don't get there until we're all there, which when I was writing these notes reminded me of trying to get out of the house with a small child. So Theravadin is the short path. Mahayana is the long path. And this reminded me as one of the thousands of historic uses of the word yoga. If you look at the word yoga in the Sanskrit, the definitive Sir William Monier's definitive Sanskrit to English dictionary, the entry is over 2,500 words long, which my trainees know. But one of my favorite translations is expedient device. And that surprises people sometimes because what they think of is yoga involves sun salutations, a rectangular piece of rubber, and some fancy pillows. But the system overall is terribly pragmatic. We call it a science because it's about experimentation. So if you feel this way and you would like to feel differently, try these practices, see how they go. You may need to experiment with intensity, frequency, and dosage, but observe how you feel. So it is really quite pragmatic. But as my teacher Mona would say, we have to be careful. And this is the supportive role of Ayurveda, because there are a lot of yoga practices that can be expedient in terms of they'll shake you up and offer you a glimpse of something that might cause a realization, but break your knee or hurt your noggin in the meantime. And so when we think of our container, we think of it as the body, the mind, and then where the two intersect, the body-mind. And so your body-mind container needs to be sufficiently resilient to hold the practice. So has anyone heard of something like a 24-hour meditation? This is a thing that some groups do. And it would be pretty easy to find one. If you'd never meditated before, you might have the body-mind resilience to sit and be probably rattled, but okay. But not all of us would. And it really depends on your personal context. You're the one who's the most informed on the resilience of your body-mind container. And that's part of why we're taking a supportive approach to practice, because I want your containers to be resilient. And so that's why we're doing movement, meditation, and a little bit of foot massage. The other thing is that it's a fundamental misunderstanding of how prana works, that prana only wants to be shaken up. What is prana? Yeah, vital life force. It's actually one of three vital essences that we have. And for those of you who are like, I have no idea what she's talking about, come to yoga teacher training. There are three vital essences which make up your being. Prana is one of them. prana is the one that yoga teachers talk about the most because it's the most familiar. So it's subtle energy. It's the energy that you're aware of. Another way of saying it might be qi from traditional Chinese medicine or mojo, right? You kind of know it when you see it, but you don't know how to describe it. And so one of the ways we often misunderstand prana is that we think we're just trying to get a bunch of it. It's like a game of Monopoly. You're just trying to gather it all up and hold on to it. But it's a misunderstanding of energy. You are taking in and expending energy through all of your five senses all the time. What we want is a smooth flow of energy. And so if you have a practice, say you do breath of shining skull breath, and you get really buzzy. It's a really assertive breath practice. You get really buzzy in your head. You could notice what happens, and maybe that's where you needed to move a bunch of your prana. But chances are you need to take some time thereafter to integrate it and sort of roll around a bit just to get it to flow smoothly. And that's my goal in our yoga practices on this retreat. It's not going to be Catherine's most irritating hits, for those of you who are a fan of some of my core work exercises, because the goal here is smooth flow. Yeah. And so in the same way that the Buddha didn't really focus on good and evil, Buddhism, the translation of the words that they use, are much more skillful and less skillful. And Ayurveda says that we can skillfully raise prana. And so I like the overlap there in terms of how we approach meditation and retreat. While Ayurveda has loads of lovely little things we could buy, and after you try some of my oils this weekend, you too will want to buy lovely little Ayurveda things. Really, we know that Ayurveda exists to maintain health, prevent disease, and then at higher levels, cure disease. But maintain health and prevent disease. And we actually don't need to buy fancy oils to do that. We need to reduce our intake. And we need to reduce our intake because I mentioned that you take in prana through all five senses. Ayurveda says you need to digest it. And so if you've read a little Ayurveda book, you'll know that Ayurveda focuses on ama, which typically gets translated as toxicity, but it actually literally means the undigested. And so at the end of a long work day or a teacher training day or whatever intellectual pursuit you have, it often feels really good to flop on the couch and to watch something because we think of it as passive. But Ayurveda says that by taking in that information, you're actually just adding more to your sensory impressions and failing to digest that which you took in. So Ayurveda promotes long breaks between meals and also long breaks of reducing sensory impressions to digest that which you're taking in. And so for those of you who have a yoga background, what's the Sanskrit word for sensory withdrawal? Yeah, pratyahara, suspension of nourishment. Ahara is nourishment, it's suspension of nourishment. So we're gonna suspend some nourishment. And obviously our retreat gives us the opportunity to do so. So for mom to step out of life and spend some time here, it's a radical practice. My friend Vanessa's in the crowd, and trying to spend time with Vanessa is really difficult. I'm really, really pleased that she took the time to be here because it's not always easy when you have lots of people relying on you. And that I know that that goes in a variety of ways. I know that's work. I know that's being a sibling, being an aunt, being a child. Lots of us are supporting folks older, parents older than us, as well as children, and then our wider community. I know support goes in a lot of different directions. The Buddha's first followers were considered radicals. And that's partly because they arose in an extremely codified system where your life was dictated to you. There was no, what's your passion? What do you want to do with your life? Find your passion. You'll never work a day. It was like, no. Here's your passion. Take it or leave it. And from that, we have, that's where we have our ideas of reincarnation and methods for ending reincarnation. Lots of people wanted to not come back. They wanted to hang out in the ether with the rest of the universe. Getting re-embodied was actually very low on the desire list. And so that's where a lot of these practices arose from. But they were radicals because many of the people who ultimately followed the Buddha were privileged. And so they gave up their privilege to sit outside society and to spend time meditating and finding out the truth of the universe. To bring it into our contemporary context, the feminist philosopher Adrienne Rich wrote, "Most of us were raised by mothers or by women who for love, necessity, or work took the place of our mothers. Even those of us whose fathers played an important role in our early childhood rarely remember them for their patient attendance when we were ill, feeding us, cleaning us. We remember scenes, expeditions, punishments, and special occasions. For most of us, a woman provided the continuity and stability, but also the rejections and refusals of our early lives. And it is with a woman's hands, eyes, body, voice, that we associate our primal sensations, our earliest social experience." And because women are typically associated with the physical, that's all for Adrienne at the moment, with our presence rather than our philosophies, but to spend time in community with ourself at the center is both necessary and radical. So, to get on with the radical business, we'll do a short meditation before dinner. Most of us will use, very naturally, breath as the anchor of your meditation. Tomorrow we'll experiment with using sound, but for those of you who have a yoga practice, breath will come quite naturally. In fact, not using breath will be challenging. If you are new to the practice, you can also use the mantra, the vehicle of the mind, the mantra of "so hum," because it sounds like the breath. And so you think as you breathe in, "so," and you think as you breathe out, "hum." And it's that simple. The breath helps you return to the present moment. So does the mantra. If you work with the mantra, you can let it go as you see fit. So maybe you use it for a little while and then it just dissipates into breath. Tomorrow we'll talk about mental noting. We'll talk about mental noting tomorrow in one of our meditations. As we're running short on time, I think it's time. Are there any questions or shares? Yeah. Awesome. So set up your sustainable seat. If you were sitting with cross-legged, you might want to reorient that cross-legged. Reach your hands out and then draw them back a little bit. Or stack your hands, gently touching thumbs or allowing thumbs to cross. Close your eyes if it's safe to do so. Or allow your eyes to settle on an external anchor gently. As you settle in, for those of you who practice with me on the mat, notice the rising inclination to do three breaths. Notice it and let it pass. And as we begin, silently express gratitude to yourself and to all the people who helped you land here today. As you watch your breath rise and fall, become aware of how you feel in your body. Become aware of how you feel about your body. And can you settle into a place of gratitude and compassion for your body, mind, which is allowing you to be here today? As your breath rises and falls, you will notice your mind wander. Into specific parts of the body. And away to places outside this room. In the same way, with compassion and gentleness, that you would return a small child or a respected elder back to the task at hand, the physical sensations of breathing guide you back into what is happening right now. As you continue to pay attention to the breath, remember that small children, it is not that they do not pay attention to what you want them to pay attention to. It's that they pay attention to everything. With gentleness and compassion, guide them back, body, mind, to this breath, in this space. The next time you hear my voice, will be your invitation to begin exit. Notice how you are in this moment. Begin to deepen your breath. And reintroduce movement mindfully. Flutter open the eyes. And shift your seat. How did that go? Popcorn is allowed. Yes. Everyone survived. Peaceful. Yep. Yep. Any questions or shares? I've learned not to ask too many questions before dinner, but I thought I would ask anyway. So that was 15 minutes. So this evening we have gentle rolling around and then guided meditation. And so tomorrow morning there'll be a little bit of conversation and then a 30-minute sit. And that's about as long as your upcoming meditations will be. So what you just did times two, a couple times a day. Sound okay? Okay, everyone's gonna stay? So because we ran over time,